Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Ishan Akbar, Angela Barnes, Gemma Arrowsmith, Luke Kempner, and this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you very much and welcome to the seventh and last in the current series of The Now Show. Yes, the BBC rejected all six of the previous editions, so we've made some material changes and we're bringing it back for one more go. This week we learned that there are now over 1,500 escape rooms in the UK, the hugely successful game experience where a group of you are locked in and have to solve a series of puzzles and tasks in order to get out.
And such is the popularity of escape rooms that Theresa May, cleverly spotting a trend, has turned the entire country into one. It's proved fiendishly tricky, so on Tuesday she turned Downing Street into one as well.
Yes, the Cabinet were locked in and a long day began. First, they discussed the possibility of a general election, and according to Laura Koonsberg...
The Cabinet was reportedly told that the Conservative Party simply doesn't have enough money to launch an election campaign.
And neither does the Labour Party, apparently. Both sides might be reduced to low-budget campaigning, using up leftover promotional materials from previous elections. So we can all look forward to seeing huge posters of David Cameron's shiny face beaming from billboards up and down the country.
Yes, that's certainly Labour's strategy.
It also gives the army the chance to make target practice politically balanced. And if you want to know where the Cameron posters are with the limited budget for the election, they will only be on three billboards outside Epping. But elections, of course, are expensive. The last ended up costing British taxpayers £1 billion, money that some think should be refunded.
Have you been missold a confidence and supply agreement in the last 3 years? Were you promised parliamentary backing that failed to materialise at crucial moments? You may be entitled to DUPPI.
Having dismissed the election option, the Cabinet moved on to a long and apparently heated discussion on how to move forward with Brexit. Finally, though, they reached a decision, and to stop any Cabinet leaks ahead of her own statement, the Prime Minister drew on her 6 years of experience as Home Secretary. First, she had them kettled, then she sent a van round telling them to go home. Then the podium of doom appeared on our screens again, and she announced two decisions. Number one...
I am not going to pursue no deal.
Now, you knew this decision had been reached because white smoke was coming from a chimney in Westminster, where it was pouring from Marc Francois's ears. And that was before he had heard decision number two.
I am inviting the leader of the opposition for talks.
Which she modestly described as...
A decisive moment in the story of these islands.
Yes, it's right up there in the list of decisive moments. King Harold falls at Hastings. The Spanish Armada is blown off course.
Jeremy Corbyn gets an invite to number 10.
Corbyn duly came round the next day like some sort of Brexit emergency plumber. I sort of assumed that the first 5 minutes of their meeting was just him going...
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Who put this deal in for you? They've done a shocking job. Who did you use?
Well, David Davis did some of it.
Oh, no. You didn't use him, did you? He's a right cowboy if he bothers to turn up. Haven't you heard of Checker Trade? I mean, I've got the votes in stock, but...
Can you get it to work or not?
It's going to cost you.
All this followed on from Monday, when MPs, having fought to show that they could do a better job than the government, failed completely. Revoking Article 50...
The Noes have it!
Confirmatory vote...
The Noes have it!
Customs union...
Everybody this time!
And they also rejected Common Market 2.0 in both its Windows and iOS versions.
The votes were also livened up by the appearance of some semi-naked activists in the public gallery protesting about climate change, which seemed inappropriate because the climate in the chamber hadn't changed at all. MPs were still arguing and disagreeing with each other. To be honest, the naked protest didn't really work for MPs or the public. Many viewers thought they had pressed the wrong button on the remote and got a very slow day on Babe Station. But with everything rejected, commentators all said the same thing.
Things appear to have reached an impasse.
It's typical, isn't it? You're trying to assert your independence from Europe and only a French word is available. You look up an alternative and it says cul-de-sac. The impasse reached its ultimate peak on Wednesday when a vote on whether to have more votes came out as a dead heat.
John Bercow, a man who loves a dramatic tie, had to intervene, the first common speaker to settle a tie since 1993, when Betty Boothroyd scored the final penalty in a shootout against Andorra.
On Wednesday night, the Cooper-Letwin bill against No Deal was debated and voted on in a single session, and the nation enjoyed the sight of all the MPs who demanded sovereignty for the UK Parliament getting absolutely furious at the UK Parliament using its sovereignty. Marc Francois said it was
a parliamentary outrage.
It's been argued that taking part in a European vote 3 years after opting to leave is humiliating, although if it's about avoiding humiliation, we shouldn't really be putting up candidates for Eurovision either. But feelings are running higher than ever on both sides.
Remainers feel anxious and leavers feel betrayed, a situation not helped by Channel 4's Jon Snow, who came under fire after he'd said he'd never seen so many white people whilst at a pro-Brexit march in Westminster.
Yes, because apart from anything else, that means he clearly didn't see the anti-Brexit one the week before. They both looked pretty white to me. Only one was decaf flat white and the other was white with two sugars. In any case, it's hardly the first time Jon Snow has come face to face with an army of white walkers. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Over on the European side, reaction was muted. Michel Barnier said... Jean-Claude Juncker said... And French President Emmanuel Macron said that an extension was not guaranteed and commented of Britain's political establishment...
We cannot avoid failure for them.
He then went on...
He also told Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar that the EU would not allow Ireland to be taken hostage. Although if movies have taught us anything, is that the Irish are pretty good in hostage situations. And that, moreover, Liam Neeson could use the work at the moment.
Thank you very much.
And now, dropping in from the UK tour of her show Rose Tinted, a show all about the state of the world and how we can have a better life within it, would you please welcome back to the Now Show, Angela Barnes.
Hello, hello. It is always a pleasure to be invited onto the Now Show because I love doing topical shows. And that's because I am a news fan. And over the last couple of years, the news cycle has been such an unrelenting tsunami of negativity that it's getting really hard to carry on being a fan. In the light of all this, the Now Show have brought me in this last episode of the series to try to provide a ray of sunshine and offer hope to you all, which I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, can only be described as a horrendous booking error. Because I am a natural pessimist. The comedian Ramesh Ranganathan once said to me, Angela, your glass isn't just half empty. You've smashed it on a table and cut yourself with it. Ramesh said that to me, the most miserable man in comedy. No wonder it's hard to find hope when all day long the smartphones in our pockets are constantly updating us on the bad things going on all over the world as they unfold. Because getting our news used to be a simpler affair, didn't it? You tuned in once a day, that was it. You watched BBC News to find out what was going on, Sky News to find out whose fault it was, Channel 4 News to find out what Guardian readers think, and Channel 5 News if you're going out and want some company for the dog. In the 1980s, the fastest way to get bad news was to ring my mum. But now it's right there in your face every second of the day, and of course we're all stressed out. And apparently April is Stress Awareness Month, as if there is anyone in Britain right now who isn't aware of stress. There are so many reasons to be stressed. For a start, we seem to have got all the bad things about living in the future. The 24-hour surveillance, pollution, creepy sex robots. But none of the good things. Hoverboards, flying cars or sexy sex robots. And also, because we're living so long, we've just got more time to worry. 2,000 years ago, people didn't have time to get stressed. They only lived to 25. What's that? Like 15 years kicking a ball against a fence, then smallpox. Easy. But never. never fear. Help is at hand. A woman called Emily Coxhead has created a newspaper you can subscribe to called Happy News, and it only reports the good news. So I thought maybe I should take a leaf out of her book and find some positive stories. Look for the roses growing through the manure that is 2019 so far. Okay, how's this for a lovely story? In Alberta, Canada, a dog called Hunter is taking the art world by storm, having been taught how to paint by his owners. Each painting apparently takes about 15 minutes. That's 5 minutes painting and 10 minutes painstakingly wrapping a paintbrush in bacon. His owner, Kenny O, said, "One thing we're always impressed with is how unique each painting is." And yes, they are all unique. It's almost as if he's a dog and doesn't know what he's doing. But my favourite piece of good news of the week is one for all us 80s kids. Grange Hill Zamo is back in the game. Yeah, child star Lee McDonald, who played Sam Zamo Maguire and who's now 50. Sorry, what, 50? Zamo's 50? Wow, heroin must be better for the skin than I thought. Donald is going to be in EastEnders. He'll appear in 2 episodes later on in the spring as a bus driver. EastEnders did want him to be in more, but he just said no. Sorry, I couldn't read. Anyone under 35 is going, what? And that is really all the good news that I could find. But if you're feeling stressed out, I think it's important to remember that in the course of human history, right now is probably the best it's ever been. In the grand scheme of things, we've got the best medicine, the best technology, we're more equal, we're living longer. I'm not saying that there isn't a lot more work to be done, but I am saying that if your biggest stress is that your Wi-Fi doesn't reach the garden, have a word with yourself. Look at it, 2019 is still statistically the best time in history to be a human. So stop worrying and start enjoying yourself. Because let me tell you, 2020 is going to be an absolute bloody nightmare.
Well, as we here in the UK enter an era of cross-party cooperation, which may well be over by the Saturday repeat of this programme, America is heading the other way as the Democrats begin the process of finding their presidential candidate for 2020. Well, to help us understand it all, would you please welcome Assistant Professor of Politics at UCL, columnist on the Washington Post, and presenter of the soon-to-be-launched podcast, Power Corrupts, Dr. Brian Klass. Well, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
There are 16 candidates, is that right, so far?
That's right.
Have said they're going to stand. Who are the favorites?
We've got Beto O'Rourke. We have Joe Biden, although he hasn't declared yet. Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren.
So we've heard of Beto O'Rourke. So he is from Texas, isn't he? He stood in the senatorial race in Texas and almost won but lost.
That's right, yeah.
And what are his sort of strengths in?
He's sort of the really energetic guy who exploits social media to no end and sort of shows up on a skateboard, more or less, to his campaign rallies, jumps on tables. He live-streamed a dentist appointment where he literally showed the inside of his mouth while he was being operated on.
And that's a vote winner. And who else is up there? I mean, Joe Biden hasn't declared, and he's in some trouble, isn't he? He's kind of having to battle his way out of controversy.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of one of these odd things, right? He's in hot water because he has apparently invaded a personal space of women that he's hugged a bit too much. And it's just sort of an odd thing because, you know, I mean, Trump has boasted about sexual assault directly. And, you know, the Trump campaign reunion is likely to be held in a federal prison. So the sort of the scandals on one side are slightly less than the scandals on the other side, I would say.
What about Amy Klobuchar?
Klobuchar. Yeah, she's from Minnesota, which is where I'm from. I've met her a few times. Her scandal is sort of a weird one. Basically, she was at one point with a staffer in the car, and she was eating a salad, and the staffer forgot to get a fork. So she pulled a comb out of her purse and started eating the salad with a comb. So it's now Combgate in America.
But she berated her staff for not getting a correct cutlery.
That's right.
In a way, it's very lucky she had a comb. I was thinking about this earlier. Most men wouldn't have any. You'd have to eat with your keys. We were discussing in the office what you would eat a salad with if you didn't have anything to eat a salad with. You could spear things with keys, but you could actually use glasses, a pair of glasses, as a pair of chopsticks. And who else is there? Are they all the front runners? Bernie Sanders, of course, is
there. Yeah, who's well-known from 2016, the runner-up. And then Kamala Harris, who was a former state attorney general in California, raised $12 million in this first quarter, which is a very impressive number. So she's still one of the front runners too.
I guess the question then is at the end of all this, can any of these people beat Trump, do you think?
A lot can happen in 18 to 20 months in American politics, as we've seen. A lot happens in one day. But yeah, if the polls opened right now, he would almost certainly lose.
But the Mueller report has come out, and that was not damaging to him. So what?
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting because the Mueller report hasn't come out. The Attorney General Barr summarized in 4 pages the report that was 300 and some pages. And it's sort of like if you'd watched the movie Titanic and someone said, what was it about? And you said, well, 700 people were delayed on their way to New York after 1,500 people disembarked unexpectedly. So, it's sort of, you know, so they sort of, you know, missed some of the key messages. One of the key messages was this does not exonerate President Trump. That was literally a line quoted by Mueller in the Barr report. And Trump went on Twitter 5 minutes later and said, exonerated completely. So even when you have a specific word that says not exonerated, President Trump bends it to his own reality.
He does have a problem with words, though, doesn't he?
He has a problem with reality, I think, more than he has a problem with words.
Well, one thing is certain in all these primaries that the candidates are going to make gaffes, which might matter or might not matter. But to end, we thought we'd ask you to identify the candidates, this is from previous elections, who made these particular gaffes.
So, Brian, who is forgetting his own policy here?
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
That would be Governor Rick Perry of Texas, who is in fact now Trump's Secretary of Energy in charge of nuclear policy. Yeah.
He couldn't remember the three policy areas.
Yeah.
Who was seen as rather pathetic because of this?
I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
To be fair to him, we do that ourselves, but it's always cut out in the edit. So, who was that?
That was Jeb Bush.
Yes.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Well, do you know what year?
I think this was 2016, is that right?
Is it? It was. Absolutely correct.
Now, whose bid suffered when it was revealed that some years earlier he had very probably at some point heard this?
Oh, I'm guessing this is Mitt Romney strapping the dog to the top of his car.
Yes.
You are so perfectly correct. What was the story there?
As far as I remember, he basically had a family vacation and the bags took up too much room in the car, so he put the dog on the roof.
He did, but it's absolutely spot on. But he put the dog in a roof box of his car on a journey in 1983, and the story resurfaced prior to the election of 2012. When they found the dog and they let it out. it was used against him by Newt Gingrich in 2012. Yeah. So you got all three.
All
right.
Three. There.
Very, very
thank
difficult.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
Now, you might have seen our next guest on BBC Two's The Big Asian Stand-Up or heard him on his podcast, Quotas Full. Please give a very warm welcome to Ishan Akbar.
So this week, James Corden, host of The Late Late Show with James Corden, Smithy from Gavin and Stacey, and the star of those confusing Confused.com adverts, said that chubby people are excluded from romantic roles in films and TV. Certainly no one ever finds you attractive. All right, James, speak for yourself, mate. I've had a very steady stream of love interest since I finally kissed someone aged 18. I was very much a late bloomer, possibly because I've always been a chubby guy. At least that's the only explanation I have, because my personality is nothing short of dazzling. So my name is Ishan Akbar, and throughout school, my nickname was Snack Bar. In fact, people's view of my size has definitely played a huge, no pun intended, part in my view of myself in relationships. I've often wondered if women are just with me to fulfil some sort of fetish. Like on some website, I'm a category called BBB, Big Brown Bear. Triple B, incidentally, is also my bra size, so... My partners, plural, thank you very much, have been aware of my insecurities about my weight. My current girlfriend, a brilliant and wonderful woman, tells me almost every day that she finds me attractive, which is lovely. But one day, unsolicited, she gave me the following compliment. You know, Ishan, I really love your shape. My shape? What's my shape? My size also affected perceptions of me at work. Before I became a stand-up comedian, I was a banker. Sorry about the crash, but I do own my own house, so swings and roundabouts. And at an annual review, my boss said to me, Ishan, everything is great, but I really think you need to lose some weight. I asked why that mattered in the context of work. His response was, well, you're in the business of looking after people's money. If they see that you can't look after yourself, how will they have confidence that you'll look after them? I had to explain to him that I didn't put on weight by eating money. He followed up by saying, look at the top of most industries. No one who is overweight is a leader. You're right, I said. I can only think of the Buddha, Mammoth from Ice Age, and DJ Khaled. But does Corden have a point? Well, yes. The representation of my big-boned brothers and sisters on film and TV is generally limited to the jolly friend or the sassy sidekick. It is important to represent overweight people on film and TV. There are more cartoons that have fallen in love in films than big people. Other than Kevin James in the film Hitch with Will Smith and Shrek, I can't think of any big-boned characters being represented in lead romantic roles. Incidentally, in Shrek, Princess Fiona had to become an ogre to justify their relationship. I'm glad that slowly society's definition of what constitutes normal is changing, but film and TV has a lot of catching up to do. I've actually played a romantic role on stage. In a school production of the musical Oklahoma, I played the role of the Persian philandering peddler Ali Hakim. I won Best Actor for my role. Thank you very much. To be honest, I don't know how much of my casting was to do with me being fairly depicted in a romantic role or being the only guy in drama society with a Persian-y skin tone. Part of the problem might be that society's perception of what constitutes chubby is actually subjective. Part of the appeal of Renee Zellweger's character in Bridget Jones's Diary was that she was worried about her weight. What? Her weight in the film hovers around 9.5 stone. That's almost 10 stone lighter than me. And if that's the measure of what big is, there really isn't much space for anyone bigger. All that said and done, I think it's important to show people of all shapes, sizes and sexualities. There's also another selfish dimension here for me. As a comedian of Asian background with a hearing impairment, if being overweight helps me get more work, I'm all for it. Get me ticking those boxes. Film and TV is at its best when it reflects our reality, and the reality is that larger people have healthy, happy, and loving relationships. Well, maybe not healthy, but you know. Thank you very much indeed.
And now for a guest you might have heard on this show once or twice before, but not in this way. This time, he's singing. Would you please welcome Luke Kempner?
So this week, the leader of the House of Commons, Andrea Leadsom, has announced that the Easter recess has been cancelled. Shut the front door. Enough is enough. I feel sorry for everyone, but especially John Bercow. What we're all thinking is, when will it stop? I'm here in the Commons all day, but it's not my first choice. No, no. I'd very much rather be sat at home watching The Voice. I'm at my wit's end. No more votes, please. Why can't I just be in my PJs ordering a Chinese? The DUP never agree, much to no one's surprise. Things are getting very desperate. I'm out of novelty ties. I'm sorry if I look disinterested, but it's all such a bore. I've shouted so much, my throat's become sore. Order! Make it stop! Make it stop! I've had enough, I'm knackered, finished, and about to drop. Make it stop! Please, make it stop! I'm ready to shout it from the rooftop. Prime Minister,
I went to church on Sunday and got drunk on communion wine. I asked God for help, but even he won't let me resign. Jeremy Corbyn! We've sat here for months debating 400 amendments. It's deal or no deal. I feel like Noel Edmonds. Take a risk, Mog. JRM and the ERG support the DUP. I'd prefer no deal, WTO ASAP. Mr. Boris Johnson!
I know a way, but it might take some flack. Yeah, I mean, I'm being upfront insane. I'll stab her in the back. The country's a ruddy state, but I have one confession. Unlock! I've really quite enjoyed all the attention. After years surrounded by snakes, don't you worry about me. For a change, I'm doing the next series of I'm a Celebrity.
Make it stop. Make it stop.
I've had enough. I'm knackered, finished, and about to draw.
Order.
Make it stop.
Please.
Make it stop. I'm ready to shout it from the rooftop.
Tricky negotiations are going on even as we speak, and more negotiations lie ahead almost infinitely. So we've asked our audience, what's the most difficult negotiation that you have ever been involved in?
What's the most difficult negotiation you've ever been involved in? Getting a discount at Poundland.
What is the most difficult negotiation you've ever been involved in? Cancelling the Brexit after-party I'd organised for March the 29th. At the German embassy.
Getting my ex out of the house so I could sell it. What bargaining chips did he use? A court order.
So, thank you very much indeed for sharing those with us, ladies and gentlemen, your negotiating tips. And thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye! Listening to the Now Show, starring Steve Funk, Hugh Dennis, Ethan Akbar, Angela Barnes, Gemma Arrowsmith, Lee Kempner and Brian Klass. It was written by the cast with additional material from Simon Alcott, Katie Story, Phil Gerrard, Kat Sadler, Catherine Bringworth and Amy Zander. The song was written and arranged by Luke Kempner and Ben Clark. The producer was Adnan Ahmed, and it was a BBC Studios production.